Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the March 7th meeting of the City Council. Let's rise together.
Over the weekend, we lost the widow of our 40th president. Can we just take a few moments of silence out of respect for the family, please? And then I'll lead us in our salute. Please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Please be seated. Roll call this evening.
Council members are here. Council member Henson.
Here.
Council member Olson.
Here.
Council member Taylor.
Here.
Council member Watson.
Present.
Council member
Birch. Here.
Council member Goodrich.
Here.
This is the public comment time of our City Council meeting, so if you would like to speak to Council on an item that's not on the agenda, if you're going to speak about signs that will come up later, come up to the podium and you have 3 minutes. Introduce yourself and where you live, please.
I'm Yvonne Goldsmith. I live at 5840 Church Road. And at the last council meeting, one or two ago, there was a comment about the city hasn't collected any taxes on the marijuana sales. Is that true?
Just regular sales tax.
Just regular sales tax? Because I was wondering about this. I work for the accounting firm of Orfley Smith, and we have a major client. And the bank just made her move all of her money, and it was a lot of money, And so if they can't bank, how do they pay their taxes? How do they get their money? Do they have to keep these large amounts of money in a safe, you know? How does that work?
I don't know the cash only banking cards.
So, yeah, because of the federal restrictions, and as you know, some of the federal restrictions involving drug transactions, a lot of the marijuana-based businesses are not able to keep their money in. A lot of the national banks, however, some of the smaller banks, I know Whidbey Island, for one of them, is allowing them to do some banking services, as well as the Department of Commerce is serving as an intermediary on some of that stuff. So, I don't know if that answers your question completely.
It does, and it just piqued my curiosity because I visited with a few different marijuana people, and I thought this will be good. Somebody will drive by and see the Goldsmith van parked here, and boy, I can just hear the gossip right now. But so how do you know if there's no way to track it, like quarterly taxes, et cetera?
They do have to track because each parcel of marijuana is tagged from production at the start of the line to sale. So they have to register that each package has been through the system, and so they can track how many packages and the pricing mechanism through that way. It's there was, back when they were developing the lottery system, they also had a point of sale POS system that was developed, and that's how they track that sort of stuff.
Just looking out for our money.
Yvonne? The county has received some marijuana money. I don't think ours has been open long enough for us to get our first check, but the county has received marijuana money already. City of Bellingham as well.
The green will continue to flow.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Your name and address, please.
I'm Jim LeMaster, also Farmer Jim and Santa Jim. 1412 Paradise Road in Ferndale. I'm the president of the board of directors of the Ferndale Food Bank. Last year, you budgeted $3,600 for our food bank, which we got the check, and we are very grateful. I wanted to put that into beans and potatoes, which you can't really do, but I can tell you that it keeps our lights on. It covers our electricity bill for the year. Last year, we distributed 500,000 pounds of food in Ferndale to approximately 23,000 individuals from 6,000 families. 100 of these people, an average of 100 per month, were identified as homeless in Ferndale. 1 in 5 in Ferndale at some point during the year will come in for help from the food bank, be it one time, be it many times. 40% of who we feed are children. 15% are seniors. The rest go to what I call the working poor. It's the people where Dad was making $25 an hour with overtime. He's been laid off. He's working for $10 an hour, 20 hours a week at a 7-Eleven. But he's still got the house, the car, and the kids to raise. These are your constituents. We do all this, incidentally, with one part-time paid employee. Everybody else is volunteer. A third of our volunteers are Alcoa retirees. I'd like you to visit us anytime. Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, 8 till noon. Always welcome. I'd like to see you down there meeting some of these people. Like I said, they're your constituents, too. Thank you very much. Please continue your support.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. We all do. Next.
I'm Papa John, as if nobody knows that, and I still live at 6072 Malloy Avenue at Malloy Adult Family Home, and that's adult with a U, not with an O, for those of you that don't know. I do want to introduce myself to the three or four new council people. I come here for two general reasons. If you see my jacket, that's because I'm the highest-ranking general nuisance ever, thanks to Keith. But anyhow, the general principles are I come for both vertical and horizontal reasons. The horizontal reasons are because I have spent many years very involved in politics from city, county, state, and even national levels as a delegate, what have you. So I know that politics can be very boring. So as a consequence, I come from some puns, some of who like them and some of who you do not. But I do tell you, if you ever think you understand me, you probably need therapy. So if you're confused, it's okay. It probably is an indication that you're somewhat normal. Then I also have food for thought, which is a vertical. I'd like to give you ideas that are meant to be profound, ideas for you to kind of mull over. But I also, now that this is part two, because there's three parts to this, I want to thank publicly and from the bottom of my heart Kathy, Keith, and Brent for their vote against the second store when it comes to the marijuana thing. And I also want to say, I heard, I wasn't here on Tuesday nights, I have a ministry, so you'll never see me on Tuesday night. But I heard that our chief was besmirched. And having spent 7 years in law enforcement myself, I've never known a better chief ever in my life than the one we have. So I want to say I apologize as a citizen for those who apparently had disparaging remarks to say about our chief and his process, is what I understand. Then I also want to give you the food for thought idea is that whatever it is that you see as primary in your life, whatever is the most important thing in your life is an indication of who you are, the definition of who you are. And the pun, there's one pun that said, why is it a bad idea if you're catching a 1 o'clock bus, plane, or train to leave at 12:10? Okay. And why is it a bad idea if you're catching a 1 o'clock plane, train, or bus, and I had like 30 seconds, to leave at 12:10. Now, I'm not a gambler, but 50 to 1 sounds like bad odds to me.
Yay!
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Anyone else like to speak to council this evening? Okay, seeing none. We'll go on to the consent agenda. Do I have a motion from council?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We go on to item C, an ordinance, a moratorium on signs in the right-of-way, and Mr. Burnett, our community development director, and he's also accompanied by our city attorney, perhaps. She's in the wings ready to go, Dana Traxler. We're glad you're both here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yori Burnett, community development director. So what staff is doing is providing to you the option of adopting an emergency moratorium for sign placement in the public right-of-way. We're doing this, again, to give you a number of options and to provide to you an understanding of where we are as far as a recent Supreme Court decision and where we might wish to go. So there are two things with the new council that I think that I should describe first. The first is moratorium. What is a moratorium, and why would it be needed possibly? in generic terms. Moratorium is a relatively blunt force instrument that jurisdictions have to enact without a public hearing temporary land use controls that tend to, because it's a moratorium, stop something from happening. They're generally intended or are allowed when a jurisdiction believes that without such a moratorium, without such a prohibition, the city or the citizens could be harmed. So sometimes you might see that if water is in short supply. There might be a moratorium while a water line is fixed. I believe about a decade ago, the city needed to put a moratorium in place in the southwest part of the city while we worked on a project to fix the issue. More recently, we've adopted moratoriums on marijuana, as it appeared that state law was changing more rapidly than we could adopt our own permanent regulations. They are intended not to be permanent, so it is a way for the city to halt things from happening and provide us with sufficient time to wait for things to be fixed physically, if we're talking about water lines, for codes to be written, if we're talking about going through our process, or sometimes for the kind of fog of war in terms of the legal system to sort of resolve itself, where oftentimes there will be decisions made that will render our codes unconstitutional or difficult to adhere to, and we want to see where the dominoes all fall before we make our own decisions so that we're not a guinea pig. Such is the case more or less here, where for those of you that are familiar with sign codes, that's where you get as close to hitting a nerve with many citizens as you can possibly get, because signs are essentially a First Amendment right, or viewed by many as a First Amendment right, and that is their freedom of speech. That's the way that they can communicate to the public or their customers. For years and years, cities were led to believe, and I think legal decisions led them to believe, that provided that city regulations on signs allowed for the purest form of speech, that being political speech and campaign speech, as long as you allowed that to be the loudest form of speech on signs, you could regulate political versus campaign signs versus commercial signs in different ways. We thought that that was legally defensible, and I believe courts had found that it was. Last year in Arizona, or maybe it was the year before because it takes a while to get up to the Supreme Court, there was a church in the town of Gilbert, Arizona, that was... it didn't have a building to call home, and instead it went from place to place. So this week it might be in the old bowling alley. This week it might be in the gymnasium. Next week it might be somewhere else. And so they told their attendees where they would be by putting signs out in the public right-of-way. Hey, this week we're here, next week we're here. The town of Gilbert, which had a sign code very much like our existing code, said, well, you can't do that. You have an off-site sign. You have a sign in a public right-of-way. You can't do that. It's too large. And so they enforced against it. The church joined with others, disagreed with that, and said, well, hold it. You allow a campaign sign to be larger. You allow a garage sale sign to be larger. You have different regulations for these different sign types, and therefore you have what's called a content-based sign code, where you need to read the sign to understand whether or not it is legal or not. Went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and to the surprise of many, if not most, land use attorneys, the Supreme Court said you cannot have content-based signs, that within the public right-of-way, which is what they were looking at, you cannot have regulations that require a jurisdiction to read the sign to enforce it. So all of a sudden, after this decision came out, all of the planners, you know, in their kind of outfits that we wear, started freaking out. All of the land use attorneys started freaking out too, because this was a huge surprise, and it rendered probably the majority of sign codes unconstitutional, unenforceable. We immediately asked council, or told council, we can't enforce our sign code. We are not enforcing signs in a public right-of-way. And we started working with the Planning Commission to see if we couldn't come to a permanent solution. The Planning Commission said, well, tell us what this means and tell us what other solutions there are. Tell us what other jurisdictions have done to resolve this. And so we waited and we waited and we waited, and there's no smoking gun that we can find that says, here's a jurisdiction that has adopted a new code based on the Supreme Court decision, and it's passed legal muster. It's been through a challenge. It's probably too soon for that to have happened. So we are left essentially with knowing two things. We cannot enforce our existing sign code. We are probably not going to get in trouble if we continue not to enforce our existing sign code within the public right-of-way. But that is not a sustainable option. Probably we feel that we do need to change our code. Two, we run up against a number of different icebergs the more cute we want to get with it, we know that we can ban all signs in the public right-of-way. That has been an understanding that we've talked about at times to this body. That's something that we can do. It's something that we have been able to do. The Supreme Court decision didn't change that. And I guess three, we do not have that silver bullet that will allow us to navigate through all of the different things that we want to protect at this time. It might be that we will have time to find it at some point. So we don't come to you with answers tonight. We come to you saying that we've discussed the possible prohibition of signs in a public right-of-way for quite some time. In many ways, this is a good time of year and a good year to possibly introduce a temporary moratorium to see whether or not what the pluses and minuses would be, and that we don't have a lot of local elections, and it's early enough in the year where we don't have a lot of people that already have signs up. What we would really like to hear from you today, though, is we know that ultimately it's your decision as to whether or not you feel that sign blight or the proliferation of signs that we often see does rise to the point of being an emergency that we need to protect against. And it might not be. It might be that the majority of you feel, gosh, you know, we can adopt a moratorium in 2 weeks if we need to, or in 2 months if we need to, if we see that it's getting out of hand. Let's wait until that time. Or you might say, we want a moratorium. Neither of those, I think, are sufficient answers for us. What we want to hear is what your overall philosophy is, because I would bet that very few of you want a straight-out prohibition because you want a straight-out prohibition. There's a reason. And that very few of you would want to just allow them any sign whenever. There's a reason, or there are certain sign types that you might want to protect or that you're concerned a moratorium wouldn't protect. Because ultimately, we're going to have to adopt a new sign code, and we're going to have to modify these things, and we're going to go through Planning Commission, and we want to know that, you know, Council Member Watson is concerned about the public market signs or signs downtown, and that those might be caught up in a moratorium, or that Council Member Olson is concerned about the maintenance costs of signs within the public right-of-way. So we want to be able to take that back to the Planning Commission and know how to navigate. The easiest thing, of course, is an absolute allowance of signs, except for the ones that are dangerous, or an absolute prohibition of signs. Those are the two, the stark black and white contrasts. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Our city attorney is here as well, and we've talked at fairly great length about the different things that we might be able to do tonight, some different things we might be able to do after a moratorium is over. But I really do want to make sure that I know that you understand the issues and that you understand what a moratorium would or would not do.
Attorney Tressler, before we interact with Mr. Bennett, do you want to add anything to all that? It is a complicated deal.
Okay. Hannah Traxler, city attorney. First off, I want to say that I wouldn't concede that the city of Ferndale's sign code is unconstitutional. I would say that it could be construed as unconstitutional based on this recent Supreme Court decision, and I think it's not straightforward enough for us to risk it. And so I do agree with Yori that we can't enforce, or we shouldn't enforce, our current code as it stands, because we can run into trouble there. He also used the word emergency for a moratorium. This isn't an emergency moratorium. It was noticed, and we don't have to satisfy those same standards. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point. I have no stance one way or the other on whether or not you should enact a moratorium. I think it is your will as to whether or not you want to go ahead and not enforce your current code while we try to develop something that we believe will pass muster, or if you want to establish a moratorium. I think either is supportable legally, and I would support you either way on that. I do understand the concerns about things like the public market sign. I understand things like enforcement costs for taking signs out if we set a time, place, and manner restriction, although I do believe that you could do that with a moratorium. What was brought up to me earlier was the possibility of allowing signs in the public right-of-way during certain parts of the day and then requiring them to be removed. That probably will create some enforcement issues that you would need to consider. So there are all these things that you have to weigh right now. But I do think that we can place some restrictions on the signs, but we're going to have to do it across the board for all signs, because the Supreme Court decision did not leave any wiggle room for us to regulate signs differently, and you already made that pretty clear. Do you have questions of me, or do you need...
Yes.
Okay.
This was the unanimous decision by the Supreme Court. So that means both the left and the right agreed you can't even read the sign. So we can't even make any judgments about what's on it.
Right.
And basically the two choices we got were either no enforcement or a ban. There's nothing else to be discussed because that's what they said. Is that correct?
No, I do think that you could place some restrictions, some time, place, and manner restrictions on the signs as long as they are across the board identical for all signs.
Size as well. We have a size 6 square feet.
Correct, yeah.
That wouldn't change, would it?
No. Okay. Because you don't have to read the sign to determine what it says to figure out.
But that no reading the sign thing also worries me, because you could have whatever you want. You could have pornographic messages. You could put whatever you want, and we cannot read it.
No, I don't think you could put pornographic messages on signs.
Well, as I'm sure you know, pornography is hard to judge. So how would you determine that?
I think that as far as what the standard is for regulating signs, the standard is strict scrutiny for regulating content. And I think that pornography would rise to the level of undermining your compelling government interest in preventing that from being out there for children to see. I don't think you have a problem with that.
But if they said we can't read it, how do you justify it if we can't read the sign?
I don't think it's that you can't read it.
Well, see, that's what I'm trying to get, because we've heard all these different things.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out which one of them are true.
Of course you can read it. You can see what the sign says. But if you, there are certain signs that are going to be prohibited regardless. Something that interferes with public safety. Somebody can't put a giant sign out in the public right-of-way that's going to block somebody's sight distance from an intersection. Mm-hmm. Can't do that. So, and in that case, I guess you wouldn't have to read it to determine that it was a public health and safety issue. But pornography, I don't think there is an issue there. Now, you're right in that pornography may be different for different people, and that may be crossing a line. Is that something that you've had a problem with in Ferndale?
No.
Not yet.
I'm just looking at all the things that could possibly happen when you do no enforcement. And anybody can put whatever message they want out there, and all the things that could crop up, because there's been some strange stuff, but nothing that risks brought to that level yet.
Councilmember Birch?
First of all, I'd like to apologize. I was going to listen to the committee audio on my way back from Spokane today, and I couldn't hear it. So a lot of these questions are probably been asked in the committee meeting, an emergency, why you referred to it as an emergency. I don't see an emergency right away having to take care of this, but I'm not sure what the sign dimensions are. Or do you consider the flags in front of the restaurants that are in the flagpole holes as a sign or a flag? Is there a difference going on there? If a business owner is renting from the landlord and they put a sign in front of their shop, is that wrong to do?
As far as the flags that you're talking about, those are regulated as signs as well.
Right.
As far as the ownership of the sign, whether it's a renter or a property owner, that is something that is challenging too, and it might be that we could provide some sort of a workaround in terms of a final ordinance where they would need to show the sign owner, like on the back of it, so that we would know who it belongs to. But as far as whether it's legal or not, it doesn't matter who owns it.
Mr. Burnett, may I ask real quick, because it's similar to what's being asked, or the Ferndale Downtown Association banners that are, I think, larger than 6 square feet. If we did a ban, would they technically fall under that?
Those are affixed to the light poles. If it's defined in the code as a sign and it's in the right of way, then it would. We would need to look and see whether or not we did define those, or if we said that was a city event sign.
Sure.
But even it could become challenging.
Councilmember Watson?
Are there any legal ramifications to us not having a moratorium if we just choose not to enforce the law until we get it to a point where it's good?
I don't think so. Okay. And I wanted to respond to Councilmember Olson's comment, too, about not regulating at all. It's not that we're not regulating at all. We're just not regulating that part of it that has been deemed questionable by the United States Supreme Court. So if there were a pornographic sign out there, we would take it out. We would take it out. And if somebody wanted to sue us on it, then we defend it. But I think you know it when you see it. Supreme Court Justice said that one time.
Right.
I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. We would take it out. We could regulate.
Councilmember
so,
Hanson.
So the Supreme Court decision really is that you can't read the signs. You cannot regulate the sign based on what it says. But we could regulate based on the type of sign, correct?
Correct.
Flags, sandwich boards, those sorts of things. Because we're not reading it. What we're doing is we're saying these signs we're going to allow. These types of styles of signs were not.
You might be able to get away with that.
We won't know until something like that is challenged in court.
Sure. Yeah.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Well, that's kind of follow up on that. I got two questions, really. One is, we already have signs defined in our code. You know, what you can put up, where you can put them up. We have people that are violating that now by putting up sandwich signs a block away from their business. And under the code, I do believe that they can't do that. They only have them in front of their business. So there's some things we're already not really kind of enforcing, if I remember right, in our discussions of the sign codes and things. But on the moratorium aspect, that means everybody has to pull their signs if we did a moratorium?
Well, it depends on how you crafted your moratorium. You could craft a moratorium that allowed signs in the public right away from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
But what I'm saying, as far as what's being asked here tonight, are you asking for an actual, I got the impression that what you guys, you're asking for is for us to put a moratorium in place and all signs go away until we, or someplace, sometime in the future, a planning commission or somebody comes up with a revision to our current ordinance. That's what I'm interpreting that you wanted tonight, but then I'm kind of hearing, well, maybe we don't really want that.
What we crafted was not what staff wants or what the city attorney wants, but what would be the really most black and white restrictive moratorium, knowing that if the council said, we're not comfortable with going to that absolute ban, we would rather look at time, place, manner restriction or some other, that we could go back, I guess, from the ledge on that. So what you have in front of you is really the most restrictive that could be considered. And the council definitely has the ability to modify it, to make the decision at a later date, or to outright reject it.
Well, so that's where I'm kind of confused with where our existing ordinance is and what we have and all the rules and size, place, and things. I thought we already discussed the flags that are on the poles, you know, whether or not it's, that meets the requirements and things like that. And I remember all those discussions in the past. So I'm confused on the fact that we're not enforcing some of the stuff now that's in our code. There's inconsistencies. You know, I know I personally, in my campaign in the past, was told, no, you can't put your sign there, pull it out, and then drive by a few days later and find my opponent's sign is okay to put there. You know, so, I'm really confused, you know, why are we even bothering doing this if we're not going to be consistent?
Well, as far as the previous discussions, a lot of that got turned on its ear by the Supreme Court decision where the business that has a sign off site can't read that anymore. We can't enforce it. So that is out the window. As far as the regulations or kind of maybe different regulations of campaign signs, I guess if you step into Yuri as code enforcement and possibly Bo as maintenance, that would be if we were advocating for a sign moratorium or a permanent sign prohibition or limitation, that would be one of the reasons where the time that staff spends regulating signs as inequitably as possibly we have been in the past or inefficiently, it's because it is difficult. Bo, I think today was saying that from day to day, you know, this campaign sign wasn't here yesterday, so he'll pull it because it's illegal, and now there's a new campaigner there tomorrow, and he doesn't pull it because he's busy that day. He said that regulating or maintaining the signs is difficult and challenging for him, not just campaign signs, but real estate signs and other ones. So as far as code enforcement, yeah, it would be a lot easier, and I think Bo said this as well, Greg, it'd be a lot easier if the signs weren't allowed in the public right-of-way. But our job is not to do what's easiest. It's to do what council wants.
Council, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, during campaign season last year, we had calls, I'd say every week, either asking if a sign was in violation or asking if they could put up a sign or telling me that there was a sign in violation and that we need to pull it. And so it also had trickle-down effect outside of maintenance, too, because we were getting that input.
Councilmember Burst and Councilmember Olson.
I'm wondering, does this apply to homeowners? I know HOCs cover signs in their covenants and are really strict about having signs in your yard. But people living along Main Street, does that apply to within their property, display and signs?
Right.
So now everybody's going to say, can I borrow your yard? But does Ferndale seriously have a sign problem? Do we have an issue with signs?
That is the distillation of our question for you. If the majority of you feel that it is not an issue, there's kind of our answer.
I just feel like you're hammering down on Ferndale again.
That's my role.
You said we, if they're blocking the public view, we, for example, the Second Street roundabout and the inside the roundabout with the sign up for soccer signs. We agreed a long time ago nothing goes in those roundabouts, but yet we didn't enforce that. That's clearly an issue of public safety. I'm trying to read that stuff and negotiate those, one, haven't you? And if we're going to say things aren't allowed for safety reasons, then we should do it instead of ignoring it. The other thing is we're coming up on mowing season. So now our guys are going to have to take all those things out, mow. Are they going to have to be responsible for putting them back in? It's a rhetorical question. But they shouldn't be. So what are they supposed to do with them? They have to be moved so that they can mow. We don't have fire when that stuff dries out this summer. There's all kinds of things to consider, and it could be a real issue with using up a lot of time that we don't have for our maintenance.
Councilmember Taylor.
During council committee meetings, we define the right-of-way areas, and can you not hear me? We describe the right-of-way areas, and there are some gray areas in defining what those areas are. How do we work through that?
As proposed, because it does vary. It varies from one lot to another sometimes, so you can't just say, oh, Portaway is 60 feet wide, because here it might only be 40 feet wide. One of the things that we put in the draft moratorium was that if there is a question as far as the right-of-way, we would err on the side of the property owner, assuming that, gosh, I don't know precisely where it is, I'm going to leave this sign be. Otherwise, we'd be possibly taking it off of their yard. And we are working on that as far as mapping is concerned, but it is about having things like this out in the field that are connected wirelessly, because otherwise you have to go back in on each and every one of those things.
Thank you. City Minister Young?
I guess I might be the lone voice from staff, but I would advocate the banning of the right-of-way of signs. My feeling, and this is, we can go either way or any way you want, but I've often thought that if a business plan is contingent on placing signs in the right-of-way, be it to get people to sign up for Little League or people to come to an open house or people to go to buy a mattress, then I'm not sure that it's the public purpose to promote private enterprise. We drive around all the time, and maybe I'm an animal of my job, and maybe most people don't care about the signs in the right-of-way, but I know it. I always see it because I know how hard our guys work to mow it and maintain it, and I always wonder, you know, is it really that essential to have, you know, the mattress signs and the Little League signs in the right-of-way? And when it comes to political season, I think the best way to garner support is to actually knock on someone's door and ask them to put it in their yard. Now, I've never had to do that. All of you have. So I can appreciate how difficult that could be. I don't think I'd want to. But I think it is surely a better sign of support than simply peppering them along the right-of-way. So for, I think, really more personal reasons for the city's enforcement and for mowing of the right-of-ways, and just to make it simple, I can't believe that banning signs the right-of-way would be an anathema when it comes to the survivability of some industry that is required or desires to place signs in the right-of-way. With that said, there are plenty of cities around here that have signs everywhere and anywhere. It works. It works both ways. But I've always been skeptical of the need for signage. I've never known a business owner that didn't think if they had a bigger sign, they'd get more business, when in fact I think a good product and a good business plan speaks more than having a 14-foot banner in front of your business. But that's my personal feelings on this. Staff will do whatever you feel is appropriate. It gets hard, though, when you start slicing and dicing and getting into the nuance, but yet that's the world where we live. So I would advocate for a ban just because it's simple, it's clear, it's unambiguous. But obviously the way we've done it right now has been somewhat hit and miss, and it will probably continue to be so should we want to try to determine what signs and when and where would be appropriate.
Councilmember Watson and Councilmember Birch, and we'll get to the public pretty soon, too.
I do appreciate your thoughts, Greg, but I just think the ban is just... it's too harsh. It's too broad a brush. And, you know, I do want the public market to be able to put their signs up and the realtors to be able to say open house and for Trinkets and Treasures to be able to put up their signs before they have their event. And I'm not willing to give that up. Mm-hmm. And so I guess my question for Yori is, given what we have from the SCOTUS and the fact that no one else has jumped out yet, can we give this to Planning Commission and have them have a series of public meetings so we could figure out what people in Ferndale want from their signs? Or do you just not want to be first and you want to wait a year? Because I'm okay with not enforcing the parts of it the SCOTUS has thrown out, as it is right now. But are we talking not enforcing it for 6 months or a year, 2 years?
Well, certainly not 2 years. We, as you know, have a lot of development happening right now. We're also working on the comprehensive plan and other things where our hope initially had been that we would have been able to take it through the Planning Commission process by now and that we would have found a good solution before we really got into the thick of it as far as development and before we had the signs really start to proliferate out there. We're not going to make that. There's no way that we can. So that's why we're wanting to bring it to you now. I would guess that we're going to keep on, depending on your direction, if you don't feel that it is urgent, and if you were to reject a moratorium, that would be what I'm taking from that decision. It's not an urgent thing. I would not be as aggressive trying to take it back through the Planning Commission immediately. I would say, let's put it on the back burner until after we're done with the comprehensive plan. Really, there would be no reason to do it before about this time next year, because then we'll be through the campaign season and all of that. So that
and someone else will have had a chance to perhaps take the lead.
First.
Yeah. I don't necessarily want to be first with this.
Councilman Virsh.
We can't forget the sign pizza here and the little guy dancing all over the corner. I missed him, but that is a sign, and how does that apply? But personally, I don't want to see the city of Ferndale spend tons of money policing signs if this passed. That'd be a lot of money, and who's got the time to police those signs?
Incidentally, it looks like we are hiring a new code enforcement officer.
We have other things for that person to do.
I just wanted to say one other thing. I do think that there are ways that you can institute some restrictions, just to address your comment about the roundabouts. I think, so the standard for time, place, and manner restrictions is that it's narrowly tailored to further the government's interests. So if it's a safety issue on the roundabout, I think you can ban them on the roundabouts. I think you can ban them in certain areas around the city, and you tailor it to your government interest, which is, you know, to help with, to prevent a danger to the public. Or there's some other things that we can probably...
Yeah, but it wasn't any content-based. It was merely the fact that they were there.
Right.
Right. So did somebody write that down? We can do that part?
Yeah.
I don't recall, Dan, if it was the city or the county that you can't put certain signs within so many feet of a public... Mm-hmm. Stop sign, directional, those types of things.
Yeah,
it is,
I think you can
people
definitely
aren't,
do that. As
things
long
like that.
As signs are treated the same, you can place those restrictions. As long as you can just create your record and show that it is narrowly tailored to further the government interest.
Councilman Olson.
I would be hesitant, though, to throw it out as far as you want to throw it out. I don't think there's enough votes here for a moratorium tonight. However, I don't think that we should throw it out till next campaign season. I'd like to see this handed to the Planning Commission after tonight and start having some public hearings and see what happens. But that's just one of seven.
Well, if the vote goes the way that I think that you believe that it's going to go tonight, what I would expect is next week I would brief the Planning Commission on this discussion. Possibly council members would participate in that too. But then I would want to be able to bring something substantive back to the Planning Commission. I don't think that there's a lot of traction. They're looking for that traction. What have other jurisdictions done? What are some basic policy points? Because I see that they've they have started to spin their wheels a little bit, looking for an answer. So I would want to provide them with maybe more of council's direction or something so that they know where to start on this. And I think that could be fairly rapidly, but we don't have that solution yet.
And I agree with you. I don't think we've given you any direction other than, and it's hard to, like, lump it on them. That's not fair either. But I don't want to sit around and wait and just wait for somebody else to do it. As my mother used to say, just because somebody jumps off the Golden Gate Bridge, are you going to jump behind them? I mean, what we need to do something. We don't need to have to wait for somebody and see what everybody else is doing. We have what they're allowing. We should try and work within those guidelines.
I'd like to ask council something, because staff floated something earlier about basically daytime use, because that would allow the farmers market, the realtors. It seems that every example that you were concerned about would be mitigated in favor of if you just allowed it during the daytime. Enforcement's another issue. I understand that. But is that something you would like the Planning Commission to look at, a daytime allowance? Or is that just a bad idea?
How are we going to get them nighttime enforcement?
We talked about that earlier today. If our code enforcement officer was hired to work at 6, then from 6 to 8 in the morning would be a time they could to do that kind of type of work. That's a possibility.
Then you get summertime where you get the things open up later and people staying out later.
Sure. I mean, there's some details to think about, but that is a possibility. We just wanted to know whether you want the Planning Commission to even consider that.
Are you talking 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.?
6 to 8 in the morning. Let's say you had an enforcement officer that worked from 6 till 3.
Okay, but if they're allowed during the day, what good is going to have
Let's say the commission and the council prescribed it was between, you could have them up between 8 and whatever.
Okay.
So if they're up before 8 o'clock, that means the assumption is they're probably out overnight or something like that. I can't say that we have the details of working that out, but do you want the commission to consider a daytime use?
I would if we have some sort of nighttime. If you're going to ban them at night, that's where your enforcement should be, is coming in, grabbing them when they're out past whatever time you say. So that's...
Who's next? Councilmember Watson?
I guess I was actually going to ask, Yori, is there something specific that we can tell you tonight to at least give you direction? I guess I'd be okay with the daytime. My concern is I would rather our enforcement officer be doing something other than driving the city for 2 hours picking up signs. And we have a lot for that person to do, and I could just see this turning into a very tedious job. Ferndale is big geographically, and I just don't know that we could do it as much as I'd like.
I think eventually people start seeing their signs are not there anymore. Mm-hmm. But it starts to work, possibly. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah.
Councilmember Goodrich? Yep.
Can we do an area, exclude the city center zone and say, in the right-of-ways outside of the city center, signs are banned. But in the city center, we can allow businesses to put out their A things. We can allow the farmer market, they can put out their directional signs down to Pioneer Park or whatever. If it's within this area. But outside of that, along I-5, let's say, a bounty on I-5, all that would be out of bounds.
So what would the government interest be in allowing them in the city center and not in other areas of the city?
Well, it seems like, we're talking about the farmers market or businesses or something like that. That seems to be more here in the city center area because the farmers market's here or whatever. You go outside of the city center, it seems like you get the political signs and all the other little temporary things that pop up that, I'll buy your house, type things.
I think there are businesses, though, outside of the city center, and so then you're regulating your signs differently, business outside the city center versus businesses inside, and I think you're going to run into trouble.
Wouldn't want to pick winners and losers that way.
Yeah. I was going to say that as far as promoting the government's purposes, if we were to consider geographic, and that is within or within so many feet of a roundabout, within so many feet of a stop sign, within so many feet of an intersection, you know, places where drivers' attention needs to be, where public safety could become a concern. I think that might be a geographic restriction that would also have a tenable public safety interest attached to it.
Which would satisfy the
Councilor Watson.
I guess I'm curious. We did a little kind of survey on Facebook, and most people just didn't want us to ban signs. And so I'm wondering, is this an issue? I mean, some of us don't like signs. I think they're ugly. But I just don't know, is this really an issue for the people of Ferndale?
Would you like to hear from the people of Ferndale?
And we've got a few people here. That
would you guys like, can we open up for the public at this point? Great. So we'll make this like a public comment period. You've got 3 minutes. Come to the front. Name and address, please.
This is Gene Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. Over the last 28 years, I have probably put up more signs than all of you totaled, because I was the sign crew with a gentleman named Bob Wiesen, and I put up thousands of signs every year. As I listen to this, it seems like you're looking for finding a solution in search of a problem. I don't think there's a problem. And those 27 years, I think I've probably had 3, maybe 4 calls to move a sign. And like I say, I've put up thousands and thousands of signs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith. Anyone else?
I'm Jim Graham. I don't live in the city. I live at 9541 Stein Road in Custer. I work for Century 21 Bay Properties, and I'm also the vice president this year for the Whatcom County Association of Realtors. Next year, I'll be the president. We're concerned, of course, about our signs. temporary directional wayfinding signs is what we all call open house signs, and they're an essential part of our business. That's what we do. To sell properties, and we do it, although I'm not a citizen of the city, I do have business here quite a bit of the time, and those signs are kind of necessary for us to point the way to people to find our open houses. I'm sure that, like everyone else, I think my signs are unique. I mean, that they're, we should be allowed to have our signs. I don't care about the other guys. Not really true, but our signs are temporary. They're only there for, like, we have an open house from 1 to 4. Then we take them down so we don't leave them for, you know, problems with the grass and all that stuff. But we just want to hope the council and the mayor, everybody's aware that we have our needs too. But they also serve the needs of the community, because people want to sell their houses. Or they want to direct buyers to their homes, and that's what we do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Anyone else this evening?
Good evening. Yvonne Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. Having sat on that side of the table and standing as just a citizen, for years and years, I've always been one that is, I don't want signs in the right-of-way. The only reason I don't want them in the right-of-way is because I've watched many, many years our employees having to get out, remove the sign, mow the lawn, put the sign back. That's at our expense, and I don't like that. The only signs that have never been a problem in all the years we've lived here are the realtor signs. Seriously. They come along, they put up this little sign, they do their open house. By the end of their open house, the sign's gone. Bravo. And but it's hard to stipulate in a rule that you're okay, but you're not. Okay? So it's a challenge. And personally, I do think it needs to come back to the Planning Commission. And I just don't think we need to wait for somebody else to set an example. Maybe we're the one that needs to do it.
Thank you. And realtors, of course, weekends usually when they have open houses, so that works out well. Any more from the public? Mrs. McKay. Welcome.
Carol McKay, 5888 Church Road. One of the signs you're talking about, safety, the new sign down at the high school is if you come down Seamount Drive, all of a sudden there it is flashing, and especially if it's kind of dusk or dark, you have to be looking at traffic in the roundabout, and here's that thing just flashing. It's not safe. If you come down Malloy Road, the same thing. That's the first thing you see. You don't look at the traffic. You're looking at that flashing sign. It's in a bad place. I mean, I understand having the sign. It has some good features to it, but it's in the wrong spot.
Thank you.
It's very unsafe.
Maybe our public works director can take a look at that on your way home tonight, see what it looks like. Since you're not usually here at night. Thank you. Anyone else from the public? Thank you so much. Council, what is your pleasure this evening? Councilmember Watson.
I'm just going to throw something out. I don't want to do a moratorium tonight, but I do think we need to continue the discussion because we have to get our ordinance in line with what SCOTUS has ruled. So I would like to move to return this agenda item to the Planning Committee for further discussion. Second.
It's been moved and seconded to refer this
planning
item.
Planning Committee or the Planning Commission?
Planning Committee, so that they can get some direction. I don't want them to have to go out and try and figure out what Council wants, because I hate that bring me a rock game. We play with them sometimes. So Planning Committee, one more time. Mm-hmm. Planning Committee can discuss. You come to us and tell us what you need from us in order to get in line with SCOTUS, which specific things have to change. That committee will work with you to figure it out. And then we can send something to the Planning Commission so they're not just starting with trying to figure out what Council wants. Would that work?
Sure. It's been moved by Councilmember Watson and seconded by Councilmember, was it Birch?
Birch.
To send this to the Planning and Land Use Committee in the future to look at it. So they would bring it back to Council or directly to the Planning Commission?
They probably have to bring it to Council.
Okay, probably. So maybe at least a discussion at Council.
Yeah,
one evening.
Hopefully shorter.
Is there discussion? Councilmember Olson?
We've already had it there, and I think it was probably 2-1, and you can figure that out, that to bring it to the whole Council because there was no consensus on what to do with it.
We were really discussing the moratorium, though. What I would like from staff is, like, here are the four things that are no longer constitutional in our ordinance. This is what we need you to tell us. We need direction on these four things because they're no longer constitutional. Because some parts are. We can do the size. That's constitutional. So I'm still trying to figure out what parts of it are truly unconstitutional, other than we have political signs versus wayfaring signs. And so I would just like from staff, specifically, what do you need from us, very specifically, which parts of it need to change? And then we give them the inputs based on just that, rather than the whole, let's just get rid of signs.
And maybe what the options are, which I think is hard. What are even the options, other than just a free-for-all? What are the options?
I think staff would request the council's understanding that in order to bring you what you want, we're not going to be able to bring it to you at the next committee meeting, sometime in the future.
That's understood, because I know that we're coming up. Well, with a comprehensive plan, there's a lot going on.
We have a motion to refer this to the Planning and Land Use Committee at some future date, which we'll schedule, not in a hurry. I hope you don't check. Any more questions on the motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Passed. 7-0, and it was sent back to the Planning Commission. I apologize.
I'm 1-A.
Okay, 1-A, Councilmember Taylor. Thank you.
Thank you, Steph.
Good. Item D, which is finding a solution to a good problem, extra money. Resolution authorizing transfer of funds to reserves. We have our City Treasurer, Mark Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council members, this was discussed in the Finance Committee. Basically, to summarize, last year we had a pretty good year in the general fund. We had excess of $400,000 surplus compared to projection. As discussed in the committee, we have put money in the past in various reserve funds and used those reserve funds, the rainy day funds when it rained. Proposal is to put $200,000 into reserve funds by the end of this year and perhaps more than that by the end of 2018.
And I believe the Finance Committee was put it on as a recommendation, as I recall. I don't have it in front of me.
Yes.
Great. Councilmember Goodrich.
if we ended up with money left over after the next year that we could put this money into reserves, why do we raise solid waste tax? Because we were told that we needed to raise solid waste tax to pay for some things, and so we raised solid waste tax. Now we're told that we have a surplus. And I just don't understand that. And in the words of one of our previous council members, if that's the case, then I'd like to see us repeal the solid waste tax increase.
Is there a question?
Yeah. I guess I would respond that surpluses come and go. The solid waste increases were to provide some stability and some sustainability to, I think in this case, it was actually the purchase of police vehicles. I think that was the last increase. It was not anticipated that we would have these this surplus. It could be that the end of this coming year, we won't enjoy such a surplus. It was kind of a, can't say it's a one-off, because I always hope that we do better than our budget, especially on the revenue side. And in this case, I think it's just an opportunity. It's a good opportunity to put some money in the reserves. Should we want to in the future use those money, you can actually take them. They're just as easy to take out of reserves as they are to put into reserves. But one of the things we've learned, at least I have learned, is that when you have money in reserves, it does take that little extra pause before you consider using them. I think we use them rather judiciously when the economic downturn came. And so I think the answer to your question is that 2015 was a good year, certainly as compared to prior years. We did not enjoy this type of surpluses in prior years. And so in my mind, at least, it would be a situation of we had a good year. Let's take that opportunity now to put it in reserves. And if in the future we continue to have reserves, and of course, surpluses, then we could certainly look to how you feel like those money should be spent.
My question is, though, is how do you tell our constituents and stuff and go to that? Well, we raised your tax, but we really didn't need to raise your taxes because we have a reserve. You know, it just doesn't seem, I'm just having a hard time with that, understanding that aspect of it. We were told we needed the money. I voted against the raising of the solid waste tax, but if we didn't need it, why do we do it?
Mr. Peterson, you had a response.
That's an excellent question. When we come up with these revenue estimates, we're talking the September-October time frame, and we're projecting the rest of the year, 2015, when we do that. We had a very strong fourth quarter, especially with the planning department bringing in quite a bit more money than projected, as well as some of the general fund revenues like utility tax on electricity, natural gas, and our own utilities. So it's basically the projection, and frankly, I mean, we heard this before, your finance director, me, is rather conservative when we project revenues. And happy day, it came in pretty strong. So certainly council needs to think about actions or not now as a result of that good fortune last year.
Thank you. Councilmember Olson.
Our constituents don't pay that tax, so they ask it. You can tell them that.
Yes, we do. If I take something to the dump, then I pay the tax.
Well, yes, that minimal point. How many times do you do that?
I know there are some some residents here in town that do not have their trash picked up by they take it themselves.
They're in violation of our rules.
Not supposed to.
So
they're in violation.
He didn't say any names. He just said
no. Yeah, just those guys are in violation for that alone. But unlike the rest of the county, our garbage rates do not include that. Correct, Mark?
That's what our garbage collector, SSC, tells us, that SSC certainly pays higher solid waste tax, but they pass it on to all their customers except City of Ferndale customers.
Okay, that's what I was trying to say.
It's kind of a little quirky, but that's what they're telling us.
Councilman Olson and then Councilman Taylor, is that okay?
I'm done.
Thank you.
Watson,
I'm sorry.
I would like to move to approve Agenda Bill 3-003.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Agenda Bill 3, D.
It's 3-2.
I'm in favor of the motion, but we also asked that a capital improvement priority list be established so that the council can review it to decide how the money's spent.
Mm-hmm. That was something the committee discussed.
Yeah. You have to prove everything we spend. So, good. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Goodrich.
I am going to vote for this, because I think it's the thing to do. I was just, like I said, wondering why we're raising the tax since they have surplus money off to the side. And so I'm not opposed to putting it into the surplus. I'm just wondering why do we raise the tax and then have what's left over.
Council, any more questions? Are you ready to vote on the ordinance?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor, Agenda Bill 1603-002, which is transfer of funds into reserve, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It's passed unanimously. Thank you, Treasurer Peterson, for that good work.
Thank you.
Comp plan time. This is where we get excited.
Do we need to shift?
Well, that's my question to you.
Do we have an option not to see the PowerPoint?
You have the option of not to see the PowerPoint. And I'm having some whispers from the peanut gallery saying that I should move on as fast as possible. So
it's only 5 minutes.
Well,
there's nothing on television. I'm
supposed to go just directly to questions.
Downton Abbey is gone.
I will go quickly. We are asking you to give us your take on this draft version of the transportation element of the comprehensive plan. Based on your direction, we're going to bring it back to our transportation consultants and to the Planning Commission, where in May they're going to hold their public hearing based on your direction and then send it back to you in June. So transportation element talks about the 20-year scope of what we plan as far as our transportation network. And there are a couple things that I want to leave you with, especially the new council members. First, what we're proposing in this element is more or less a maintenance of our existing element, which we last updated in 2012. It's a relatively recent update. Everything is pretty much gone according to plan. So while we have new numbers and new traffic projections and new traffic counts, there's nothing that's especially surprising about it. We're not all of a sudden saying, oh my gosh, we need this new project. What we still have are some very expensive projects that we're going to need in the future. And I think that that's going to be something that I hope that you can discuss a little bit tonight, where, backing up just a little bit, our comprehensive plan is supposed to be our 20-year project list. This is what we expect to do within the next 20 years. Within that, your 6-year transportation improvement plan, and then the corollary and the capital facilities element, the 6-year capital improvement plan, is nested within that comprehensive plan. There is nothing in the 6-year plan that should not also be described within the comprehensive plan. So we are going to be working through this go-around of making that a better fit. So that it is easier to see how a project transfers from the, we're 18 years out on this project, now we're 6 years out, and now we're doing the design, and now we're building it. To see that progression over time and see that evolution, that's going to be better for cost accounting, for predictability, and for showing your constituents that, yes, that project that was such a long ways out is now actually being built instead of always going down to the bottom of the list. In this transportation element, we're talking about expanding our non-motorized transportation to a slight degree. We're not where a city like Seattle or even a city like Bellingham is, where we can't rely on the Whatcom Transit Authority or Transportation Authority to provide us good, reliable, convenient transit service.
Why not?
In fact, Lummi Transit mm-hmm. provides us much more reliable service in many ways than WTA does. Doesn't look like that's likely to change anytime soon either.
I would disagree. But
you would disagree with that?
I would, actually. We've been talking about in the WTA board meetings about how to provide and providing better service to Ferndale is actually something we're talking about because of all the students who go to Whatcom Community College who use that so much, but they need to go more often so they can do running start. So that actually is something the board has been discussing the last two meetings.
Well, and hopefully that does come to pass. I mean, certainly that would be fantastic. We're wanting to take a little bit more conservative view of it until we're pushing for that, but to say Bellingham, for instance, anticipates that there's going to be 20% reduction in automobile trips as a result of transit, bikes, and walking. We can't make that sort of claim at this point.
No.
So what we're wanting to do is to lay some of the infrastructure, especially the non-motorized, so that we can have a more reliable network to get in and around the city, not necessarily the connectivity to Bellingham. At this point, again, we're going to update this in the next 7 years or so, and hopefully we'll be looking at something a little bit different. Most of the rest is fairly similar. The project list is fairly similar. As you might expect, if any of you has purchased or built something, construction materials continue to go up. They skyrocketed last year. They've come down to earth to a certain extent this year, but they're still higher. That means that per unit costs of these projects are going to be higher than they were in 2012. Even though we have had some possible good news from the state as far as funding, we are not anticipating that we're going to be in a position of necessarily decreasing the traffic impact fees. In fact, we might be looking at an increase. So we want to get that in your head relatively early. We expect that we're going to come back and talk about traffic impact fees more specifically within the next couple of months. The last thing I want to leave you with before we turn it over for questions is we need to understand what Thornton does versus what Main Street does, where as staff, I developed some concerns over the last year or two that Thornton was sometimes seen as a fix-all for all of our transportation issues, that if we only built Thornton, Main Street would be so relieved that we wouldn't need to worry about improvements on Main Street, that it was, if we do Thornton, we don't need to worry about Main Street, or we can do Main Street and not worry about Thornton. We're going to have to do both projects over the next 20 years. And in fact, Main Street, if growth continues to occur, will need to be considered first before Thornton, because Thornton improves things to serve a significant portion of our existing residential development, but especially our future residential development to the north. It's a future growth-related project. Main Street is something where you all drive on Main Street and you all see the issues, and if we continue to add growth, not even just in that Main Street corridor, but up in the whole, you know, southwestern or southern part of the city, Main Street is influenced because it is our east-west connector. So Main Street is something that will be need to be improved. It's not just Main and Labania, it's not just the signals, but it's going to be at the interchange as well. So we're wanting to make clear to you from the very beginning, it's not either or project, it's both projects that we're going to have to be looking at.
Councilmember Birch?
No, I'm hard.
Councilmember Goodrich?
When we're looking at transportation, I just had a chance to just briefly look through this. Do we look outside the city limits? Because Slater, when it floods, has a great impact on Main Street. So if the county were to fix Slater and raise it up so it was no longer a flood issue, then that at times would relieve a lot some headaches on Main Street. Same as if we had it at Imhoff and Slater. There was a traffic signal there where people could, you know, go down there and make that turn a little more safely. You know, but all that's outside of our jurisdiction. We have no control over it. But
right. Well, and so Kevin could probably talk about this as well. What I was going to say is that Whatcom Council of Governments is the regional transportation authority, and that they're supposed to bring these common factors together and consider them.
But it wouldn't be in our transportation plan. We'd have to try to get it into somebody else's, the county's?
We list nearby jurisdictions improvements, but we don't fund it.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty important to keep in mind that when you're talking about the Slater problem with the flooding issue, that is very isolated to a few days out of the year. And so the identified project cost with Slater was in the, like, $15 to $20 million range to improve that on Slater to alleviate the flooding issue that was essentially for 2 to 4 days out of the year. And I believe that Whatcom County determined that that was not a good utilization of funds to modify the road to deal with such an isolated incident, that the money would be better spent on something that was a daily occurrence, not an outside liner.
Council? Councilmember Watson?
Just a question. There's a lot of info here on our current situation and not a whole lot on the future. So is that something that the models look, I mean, that they want you to do? Mostly this is where you are now as opposed, because there's only a couple pages talking about the future for 2036.
There are, Transpo is, first you do start with existing conditions and you run the model to replicate those existing, and then you add in the new stuff. What we have for you is what the Planning Commission last saw. Now, since that time, there have been a number of new slides and depictions that have been added. The majority of them are maps that show here's existing, and then you add in all of this development, and here's what we expect in the future. And what they're doing right now is working on the project list. So here's what you have. Here's what you're going to have in the future. Here's what breaks, and then here are the projects that you need to fix it and bring it back to the level of service. So what they're working right now is that project list. Okay. I was talking to them today about it, where they're wanting to rectify our six-year list with the 20-year list, where right now there's some things on a six-year that aren't on a 20-year. Mm-hmm. Bring those together and then say, now how do you pay for it?
I guess for me that's what I would like to see, right. the project list, just to see what do you want us to do in the 20 years, you know, as the whole system, because we're talking about moving up, the city's growing towards Grandview, and we're talking about Thornton, but from a system, what's the biggest bang for the bucks, what do we need to do first? That would help us to prioritize as well, and I mean a complete system, thinking about where we are 5, 10, 15 years from now.
And that is exactly where that transition really goes from the planning side of things to the public works, where we're going to see in that discussion, which is going to probably be relatively soon, Kevin talking to you about here are those projects, and I'll be just, you know, sitting there.
Well, that helps us, because if you tell us what our priorities are and why those are our priorities, then it's our job to go find the money. You know, you guys can look for grants, and we can try and figure out how we can get you the money as well, but I would like to get some priorities in, like, we need to do this in the next 5 years, and 10 years we need to do this. I know things will change, but it would just help for long-term planning.
Right, right. And that is another thing that we are wanting to bring to the table, is to make that long-term planning and then the interim planning and the short-term much more seamless,
mm-hmm.
much less seamful.
Don't be seamful.
But we're having that combined map of all of our transportation and capital projects, where we can see, do some rise to the top, because you can kill three birds with one project,
mm-hmm.
And also be able to evaluate the relative costs and to be able to go from the planning level costs to the actual design costs using the same methodology. Right now, Transpo has a method for evaluating costs, and then Reichardt and Eby has their own. Is there a way to adopt the one that we're most comfortable with and take that all the way through? One other thing that I do want to point out, well, last time we said that we are dealing with a changing environment, you know, natural environment, and we're needing to plan for that. We know that rail through this region is hugely important and is only going to increase, whether there are specific projects or not. Our transportation network is very much constrained by the rail network, and we have only limited ability to influence Burlington Northern or rail traffic. To the extent that we can, we're wanting to state that in our transportation element, and apparently we're one of the only jurisdictions that is talking about doing that, to talk about the relative delays, the fact that when a train is blocking the intersection, that our emergency vehicles have a tough time getting through. So if nothing else, we can go to the state or the feds or whomever, because they always say, well, what's in your comp plan? And we can say, what's in our comp plan is we're frustrated by our impacts due to rail.
It's a good idea.
Maybe they'll ignore it. But
put it in there. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Agree.
So what I'm hoping for, or what we're hoping for, is to either say, sounds like you're on the right track, we're going to see the financial stuff and the project soon, or to say, we don't like the direction that you're heading.
Council.
I like the project oriented. I mean, because I think that's easier for us. You know, you tell us what projects we need to do in order to make things better. I mean, signalization, whatever, Thornton. I think it's much easier for us. I mean, because there's a lot in here, a lot of information. I mean, there's 20 pages of just facts and figures. But I think from a council standpoint, you know, staff figures out what project needs to be done next, and then we'll figure out how to get the money.
And for those council members that, who don't understand LOS or level of service or other things, get in touch with Kevin or me, and we can explain some of those things, because it is dense, it needs to be dense, and it does make sense even though you might not understand the language.
Great. Councilmember Goodrich.
Are you sharing this with the fire district too?
We will, certainly. They haven't asked for it, but I'll definitely send it to Chief Russell.
I'm meeting with them Thursday with the fire district.
Okay.
And I know that some transportation questions have come up in the past with them.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because they're concerned about getting the fire units from A to B.
Right.
Councilman Watson.
Same question with WTA. Have you shared this with WTA? You know, your kind of your assumptions versus their assumptions, because they're doing their strategic plan, their 20-year strategic plan right now, too.
I will send it to Rick Nicholson with
yes.
WTA. We have collaborated on transit mm-hmm. in Ferndale. But, yeah, certainly for him to see whether or not there's anything else that he can glean from it that would help him or that he disagrees with.
That'd be wonderful. He'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Any more questions of Mr. Burnett?
When are you taking this to Planning Commission again?
We would take it to them in May.
Okay.
We might take it to them a little bit before, just as we get those projects in there. This and the capital facilities element are the two elements where there's a pretty sharp divide between council's obligations and planning commission's, because you hold the purse strings.
Okay.
But we would definitely bring that to the planning commission to make sure they understand what they're getting into, but the relative importance and how much is being willing to pay, that's up to you.
Okay.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Burnett.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And going on to the next item of business, which is council rules and procedure, I'm going to turn this over to our city clerk, who's been working on this. Item F.
Okay, so we had a pretty lengthy conversation about this at the committee level yesterday, and I don't think we need to go through it line by line, because we did that. So basically, all the changes here that we've addressed are removing contradictions that were in our council rules of procedure. They'd say one thing one place and then contradict it later. So we removed those contradictions. We sort of conformed the rules to what our current practices are instead of violating our own rules of procedure, basically. And just kind of cleaning a few things up. And, Finance and Administration Committee recommended this for approval to the council. There were actually five. There were also two members of that, not on the Finance Administration Committee, that were there as part of that conversation. So.
Do you have any questions of staff? Councilmember Watson.
On page 164, section A, it's the roll call vote. It says voice vote is the preferred method. Councilor or mayor may request a division of the vote. Does that mean that, I guess, because by Robert's rules, I just want to make sure I understand. By Robert's rules, it's the body's decision to do the roll call vote. So all you're saying is someone on council or the mayor can ask if we can do a roll call vote. Is that, am I reading that correctly? Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I might recommend, just to assist you, that in case if there are changes that want to be made, I might suggest, because the entire committee approved this, is to make a motion to adopt the whole thing. A second, if there are amendments that could be in, then after that, that would be the cleanest way to do that. But whatever your pleasure is, Council.
Well,
Go ahead and come forward, sir.
Props.
I have a couple concerns and one issue. It's on my page 71, in Article 15, the appearance of the federal service office. Gene Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road, sorry.
159.
In the second paragraph under 15, this may involve a council member's business associate, a member of the council member's immediate family. I would like to see something in there on intergovernmental, because I think we have a very big issue on the council right now on intergovernmental issues. And also on page 80, my page 80, under conflict of interest, on page 81 in mine, the third dot, an elected official may not solicit or accept any compensation which might influence the manner in which they perform their official duty. I think there is a big issue on this council on that issue. And then 12, forms of address. We are not a parliamentary or a monarchy. I noticed the man from the that spoke from the food bank, as the mayor said, thank you, Jim. If you expect us to address you by titles, then we should be dressed as citizens or sovereigns, because we are the sovereigns. You are the subjects. We are not the subjects. We are the sovereigns. And I do not like the idea that we must address you by titles. I still get letters every time somebody, it's a former legislator that served in 46, passed away, and the envelope says the Honorable Eugene Goldsmith. That bothers me intensely. It did when I was in the legislature, because I am the servant when I'm serving in the public. I am not the sovereign. We don't have titles in America. Thank you.
Thank you, Citizen Goldsmith. Anyone else from the public want to comment on rules and procedures? Where were we up here, folks? And you, what's the wish of council? Councilman Rules.
In I wasn't on this committee, but I brought up the Section 8 council meeting agenda about adding things to council by the mayor, city administrator, and staff, by the recommendation of a standing committee, or by three council members. I didn't like the fact that the mayor or the city administrator, but yet it would take three of us. But we discussed that a little bit, and for the new people, anybody, any one of us, if there's something on this agenda that you don't like, you can make a motion to have it returned to a committee if it hasn't been vetted by a committee, so that if you think that something should be further looked at and the committee should have some sort of input before it even gets to this, you have the right to do that. So I just want you to know. Other than that, I'm okay with the way it is now. I just wanted you all to know, the new people, that it doesn't take three of you to remove something if that's what you want.
It does take three of us to add something.
Well, that, yes, but that would be, in my view, that would be, in essence, vetted through the committee. So if the committee...
It takes one person to bring something to committee. Anybody can put an agenda item on a committee, but it takes a committee to bring it to council, or three people in a separate way. Don't have to be committee. It doesn't have to be a committee to bring something to full council.
All right. Our audience members are giving us the please speak into the microphone indication. So
I'm speaking to it. I don't have a short voice, so I
just wanted to pass the reminder on to the body.
I've been accused of actually the opposite. So,
Councilmember Goodrich.
One thing that I had a question on is the idea of the telephoning, calling into the council committee meeting. I know in the past when Councilmember Malpezzi was here, that he tried that a couple of times, and it failed kind of miserably. It didn't seem like it worked. I don't know if the problem was on his end or the speakerphone here or what, and I was wondering, do we really have the technology to do that here and at a committee meeting? Because I was under the impression we didn't. So last year when I was gone due to the funeral and other issues of the family, I could have easily have called into the council and been a part of this. But I was under the impression that we could not, it wasn't something feasible to do, so I didn't even attempt to do it.
Mr. Swinney, you want to tackle that one?
can you call in to a committee meeting and do the conference call thing? Yes. Is it a pleasant experience for anybody involved? Not really. Could we attempt it here? Perhaps. Again, would not be a pleasant experience for anybody involved in that process.
Well, I know the fire district does it.
Yeah.
One of their commissioners, in fact, he'll most likely be gone, he calls in from Arizona, and he conducts the meeting from Arizona in summer times and things. And it works fine in their environment, but, of course, they don't. I don't think they record anything, and it's a smaller venue than what we have here. But
In general, if you have, you know, three people sitting around a table, you can make a teleconference work. If you have the 20-some gathered here in this room...
Then my question is, if it's not feasible and stuff to really do it, then why do we have it as an option to do it in the rules and procedures?
Hope springs eternal. Someday.
It is an option.
Yeah, it is an option. It's just not very pleasant.
It makes it clear that you can't use it
unless it's working. Unless both sides, you can hear everything and we can hear you, and the whole thing has to work perfectly. Obviously, we're not there yet. And we certainly could remove it if you wanted to.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you know, it's an option or not, it's not really an option, then why do we even have it in there?
Any other questions? Again, what is the pleasure of the council?
Trying to find the first page to give you the number.
Councilmember Watson, thank you.
I move to approve Agenda Bill 03005. Second.
It's been moved by Councilmember Watson, seconded by Councilmember Taylor to approve the agenda bill, which is basically kind of a cold scrub of council rules and procedures. Is there more discussion? Councilmember Watson.
Just speaking to Mr. Goldsmith's concern, I don't think anybody cares if they call us council member. If you come up and say, yo, Kathy, I hated your vote, that's okay. You don't have to.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be the first person to say that, by the way.
And those are rules for the council, not for the public.
Yes. It's more to keep us polite than you. It's about our behavior, not yours. So you can call us whatever you want. We're just not allowed to call you names. That would have been so cool.
Any more discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All in favor of adopting the agenda bill on the council rules and procedures, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Passed 7-0. We have updated the council rules. Thank you, councilor.
Thank you, city clerk. I know we made that more fun than it should have been.
There we are toward the end. Mayor reports, we'll go with that. I just have two. First of all, the Jurassic Parliament is coming up. That is March 23rd, and it looks like we've got a number of council members from other cities coming. I don't know, up to about 20?
26
people coming. So it might just be fun to be with other people, but we're going to get our Ann McFarland, the current council rules. I think she might even appreciate having those as she runs the seminar with us. So I hope you're all coming for that. We invited our planning commission to come, too. I think I have. The only other thing is Riley and I are going to do put our dog and pony show on the road tomorrow and talk about Star Park. And Ferndale on the Joe Tien show, that's 9:30 at noon, right?
No, it's on AM 9:30. It's on at noon.
There you go. Thank you. Council reports. Councilmember Watson.
Community meal is this Saturday from 10 to noon at the church on Washington Avenue.
And it's always good.
Always good.
Took my daughter last week.
I can't remember what we're feeding them this week. I've forgotten, but it's from 10 to noon.
Very good. Any other reports from the city council? Seeing none, we'll go back to staff. Start with the chief and back. Chief Knapp, any reports? Treasurer Peterson?
The auditors are in the house. They'll be here about 4 weeks.
We gave them the tiny room, I noticed.
We did. We did. We got our stuff in early, so they were able to come out here in March. And y'all be invited to the exit conference probably April, May-ish. I don't expect any issues. We've done 11 years in a row of no findings.
We've done very well.
No pressure. 11 years in a row, though.
Community Mr. Burnett, do you have any report? Public Works Director Rents.
We're finishing up the crosswalk, hoping for some weather and an open pavement.
And I believe we have a ribbon cutting scheduled. Is that a hard schedule?
Not yet. Confirmed.
We are on for March 30th.
After committee meetings.
We're still waiting for a few more attendees to confirm, then we'll send out
the tentative date.
So in pencil. City Clerk. Communications Officer Sweeney.
My weekly mention of the Star Park. If you haven't seen our blaring Facebook announcements, fence pickets, your last chance to get fence pickets is this Friday. The deadline is this Friday.
When?
Tell everybody. This Friday. So please
this
buy.
This Friday, this week.
This Friday. This Friday. So
buy some.
Buy a fence picket. Buy two. Buy some for your friends. Buy out just one letter and do a whole row. Please buy them all. They're fantastic. On a more serious note, there's going to be a drill at Skyline Elementary on March 23rd after Jurassic Parliament. We're going to be simulating a natural gas leak. I've been working with the Ferndale School District Safety Advisory Committee, which does not have a cute acronym, but really should, about coordinating the emergency response and some of our emergency planning on that. So we're going to be doing a full evacuation and reintegration drill. It should be very exciting. So,
thank you, Riley. And our city administrator.
I wanted to let you know kind of a follow-up to our council retreat and our previous discussions about wanting to do some long-range planning on our facilities. David King, the architect, has sent me a proposal to do exactly that, to look to our needs in the next 10, 15, 20 years, and I'll be bringing that proposal to the next committee meeting.
Great.
So we'll be able to kind of close the loop on that report.
Will that go to which committee will that go?
Probably planning and land use, public works. Public works.
You pointed
me. Yeah, I thought of it. It's public works.
Yeah.
It's buildings.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd love to do
it. I see that. Mrs. Goldsmith.
I just want to give a compliment. I want to commend, I think it's Riley, that did the Star Park sign-up page. Oh. It was so easy. You gave different time periods, and I got it done within seconds. I signed up for every one of the days except for one. But because it was so easy, so thank you for making it easy.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Sign up all your friends.
City Council, I would entertain a motion to dismiss.
So moved.
It's moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Good night, folks.